Welcome to Let's Talk Micro. Hello, my dear audience. Welcome to another episode of Let's Talk Micro. As always, I hope you had a great week. And of course, you can find Let's Talk Micro on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, Goodpods, wherever you listen to podcasts, you can find Let's Talk Micro. As far as social media, I am on Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube as Let's Talk Micro, on X as Let's Talk Micro 1, on LinkedIn as Luis Plaza, and I have an email address, which is letstalkmicro@outlook.com. So either via social media or via email, you can reach out with any feedback, any topic suggestions. Those are always welcome and appreciated. So please go ahead and subscribe to the podcast, download episodes, and if the app allows you to do so, please go ahead and leave a review. As always, I am so thankful for your support. And as you know, the Let's Talk Micro podcast does not have any sponsors. So I'm always looking for great content, and sometimes, you know, I have to go to conferences and things like that. So if you want to support the podcast in any way, you can do so via Venmo or via Buy Me a Coffee, KOFI, and both links are available on the show notes. And those of you that like the AMR subseries, stay tuned. Soon we're going to start recording more episodes and releasing them so you can enjoy them. And speaking of antibiotics, if you are looking to learn more about antibiotics, please check out www.learnantibiotics.com and the Learn Antibiotics book available on Amazon. These resources include cheat sheets, practice tests, games, and more, and they are being used by thousands of people worldwide and may be helpful for you or your colleagues. Great resources from Dr. Timothy Gauthier, a very passionate pharmacist. If you haven't checked out the previous episode, please go ahead and do so. It was one of those episodes where I go over an organism, so there was not a guest. So some people like those better, some people like the ones with guests better, but in this case, it was one where I was just talking about an organism, and in this case, it was about Actinotechnum shallii. And the question for you is, have you heard of this organism? And I'm sure that if you work with urine cultures and you have moldy tough MS on your workspace, you probably have. As you know, one of the things with moldy tough is, like, since it has a wider database, we're seeing more and more names of organisms, and this one we see it a lot on the urine bench because it is seen in urinary tract infections. And the question is, right, do we report it? What do we do with it? Do we do susceptibilities? All great questions, of course. And this organism is a gram-positive rod. It is catalase negative. And it is an anaerobe, but it is aerotolerant. And that's why you are able to see it in the urine bench. Because, as you know, in the urine culture bench, the plates that you set up are blood and McConkey, so you don't set up any anaerobic agar. And that blood and McConkey that you set up, they're incubated aerobically. But this organism is aerotolerant, so you will see it growing aerobically. And the colonies are pinpoint and whitish gray, and they can be pinpoint at 48 hours. And this is an emerging pathogen, and it is mostly seen as a pathogen in urinary tract infections in the elderly. It is thought that it might be part of the microbiota, so that kind of complicates things, but there's not a lot of information about it. So I went over when do we report it in the episode. It has to be significant and pure. And this is when it comes to urine cultures, because sometimes, you know, some organisms that you call your genital flora, there are some guidelines in the Clinical Microbiology Procedures Handbook that it says that if they are pure and significant, you have to report them at least to the species level. So that's something that I will be talking about on today's episode as well. But in the CMPH, which is the Clinical Microbiology Procedures Handbook from the American Society for Microbiology, in this document, it gives you what's the criteria for pure and significant growth. So how many colonies do you need to have? So definitely refer to this document if you want more information about it. And with this, of course, you know, the question of, okay, we know when to report it, when it applies to urine cultures, and we also think about susceptibilities, right? So I also talk about that in the episode. So all in all, a great episode. So please check it out if you haven't already. Okay, so let's go ahead and talk about today's episode. In today's episode, we are going over lactobacillus. So this episode is about me going over an organism. And what are some things that we associate with lactobacillus, you know, when we think about it? Of course, you know, we think about urine cultures. We think about long, thin rods. We think about it being catalase negative. Of course, you know, we also think about good flora and probiotics, right? We think about yogurt and things like that. So let's go ahead and talk about lactobacillus. So this is a non-spore-forming, catalase-negative, gram-positive rod. And one thing that maybe you don't realize is that lactobacillus is grouped with the anaerobes. So if you go to the textbook and you're looking for it, you're going to find it with the anaerobes. And it is aerotolerant or microaerophilic, which is one reason that you can definitely recover it when you're reading urine cultures, right? You see it a lot as part of the genital flora. So, and as I mentioned before, on the urine bench, you know, you do blood and McConkie. So it will grow in blood. I will talk more about media. And of course, we know when you're looking on textbooks and you're looking gram-positive rods, right, you typically classify them as spore-forming, non-spore-forming, catalase-positive, catalase-negative. So if you're going through a textbook, you're seeing catalase-positive and you see your bacillus, you see your cyanobacterium, you see your listeria. And then you go to the catalase-negative, gram-positive rods, and you start seeing your lactobacillus, you start seeing your erysipelothrix, and other organisms. And as a student, you know, I always like to remind you to make sure that as you're learning these organisms and have talked about building a file in your brain as you're grouping things together. So of course, you know, you keep the gram-positive rods in your brain, aerobic, anaerobic, spore-forming, non-spore-forming, and of course, catalase-positive and catalase-negative. And in the lab, the ones that you see the most growing aerobically, of course, you know, you see bacillus, cyanobacterium, and then you see listeria to a lesser extent. But you definitely see a lot of lactobacillus, especially when you are working urine cultures. So remember, catalase positive, we have bacillus, listeria, cyanobacterium, and then catalase negative, we have lactobacillus. So lactobacillus is part of the order Lactobacillales and family Lactobacillaceae. And they produce lactic acid as a product of glucose fermentation. And when this happens, you know, this makes the vaginal pH acidic, which results in an environment that is not hospitable to pathogenic bacteria. And this is why we probably hear, right, about we hear, you know, eat that yogurt, you know, get those probiotics, build those healthy levels of flora that way, you know, to reduce the chance of getting like UTIs and infections in the vaginal area. One interesting fact is that there has been a huge reclassification within this genus, and those of us that are in microbiology, right, we definitely do not like reclassifications. As we learn one name, and it's a little bit of an exaggeration, of course, but we learn one name, and then it changes, or we're running something on the Molitov, and we get this weird ID, and then we research it, and we find out that it used to belong to another genus. And of course, as more testing is done and things like sequencing, these things are going to change, and we find out that some organisms, you know, they're more similar to others, and we get things like reclassifications. But it's still, you know, it's a little bit annoying, to be honest. So there were over 260 species before, and now with all the reclassifications, only 42 remain. And some examples of this are, before it used to be Lactobacillus, and now it's Lacticacibacillus, which includes Lacticacibacillus paracasii and Lacticacibacillus rhamnosus. And I am sure that at some point in time you have seen either of these in the MALDI, maybe under Lactobacillus if the database hasn't been updated yet. But these two, when you're doing IDs, they're pretty common to see. Another example of reclassified genera is now Lactiplantibacillus, which used to belong to Lactobacillus. So let's talk about some species of Lactobacillus that we have seen in humans. And some of these are Lactobacillus jansenii, johnsonii, paragaceri, inners, and acidophilus, among others. Lactobacillus is widely distributed in nature. You find it in foods, for example, yogurt. And doesn't that remind you of that at some point in time in maybe a microbiology class, you have done a gram stain on yogurt, right? It's pretty cool. When you do that, you see things like gram-positive coxine chains. You know, there are some species of strep. You see your gram-positive rods. There are some species of lactobacillus. So it's definitely something very cool, and that's what comes to mind. But lactobacillus, it is found in foods. It is normal flora of the mouth, gastrointestinal tract, and female genital tract. And these organisms, they're frequently considered a contaminant or flora. They can cause bacteremia in immunocompromised patients. And when we talk about bacteremia, let's think about blood cultures. And those of you that do blood cultures, You know that sometimes when it comes to gram-positive rods, you kind of need to see them in more than one set to consider them significant. For example, if you get something like a bacillus or a carinobacterium in one set only, you pretty much will dismiss that as a contaminant. But then if you start seeing it on more than one set, that's when you perhaps start thinking, okay, maybe this is the agent of infection, if you see it in more than one. But typically in one, it kind of gets dismissed as a contaminant. So according to the Manual of Clinical Microbiology from the American Society for Microbiology, it seems that patients that get infections with lactobacillus typically have an underlying condition, like malignancy, maybe they had an organ transplant, or they have diabetes. Lactobacillus is frequently associated with dental caries, and they gain access to the blood during things like dental procedures and brushing your teeth. And as I mentioned, this can cause bacteremia, and it can also cause endocarditis. And the organisms that are more commonly seen in bacteremia and endocarditis are L. rhamnosus and L. cassii, which I mentioned before, they used to be part of the Lactobacillus genus, and now they have been reclassified as Lacticaseibacillus. Species of Lactobacillus have also been implicated in intra-abdominal abscess. Other infections are peritonitis, and even some cases of meningitis have been mentioned. But keep in mind that it's mostly seen like in bacteremia and endocarditis when it causes disease. So even though you have some cases out there, just keep that in mind. And something interesting that I read in the Manual of Clinical Microbiology is that there are some concerns about probiotic strains causing disease. And there are some cases where this has happened. And there has also been cases where there is a connection between probiotics and some strains that have been seen in infections such as sepsis and endocarditis. However, and this I read it also in the MCM, the risk of getting an infection is low. So keep that in mind when you're making that connection between probiotics and infection. Okay, so let's go ahead and talk about the gram stain. So the gram stain of Lactobacillus is long or short rods, and they form chains. And those of you that have seen Lactobacillus in urine cultures, you know that typically you see that classic morphology, where you see those long thin rods, but keep in mind that you can also have short rods. And I'm going to talk about morphology, of course, but one thing that I have noticed on my time on the bench is like when you're on the urine cultures, that's where you typically see those long thin rods, those classic ones. And then maybe when you move to other areas, perhaps you're recovering Lactobacillus from like a wound culture, that's where you see those short rods. And something interesting is that, and I'm sure that those of you that work on the bench have seen it before, it's like Lactobacillus and other gram-positive rods, you know, they can sometimes stain variable or even negative. And as I was doing the research for this, there are some methods that are mentioned that can help with this. And one is the 3% KOH potassium hydroxide method. And here, the organisms that dissolve in KOH, in this 3% KOH, are potentially gram-negative, while the ones that remain are potentially gram-positive. And the other method is L-alanine-4-nitroaniline. And bear in mind, and my apologies if I mispronounce some of this, for this procedure, you add 0.25 mLs of purified water to a test tube, and then you prepare a heavy suspension with the organism. To this, you're going to add one disc that contains L-alanine-7-amido-4-methylcoumarin L-alanine-4-natrioanalyte and L-alanine-P-natrioanalyte reagent. And say that three times fast, huh? So you add that disc to that suspension, and then you incubate at room temperature for 5 to 20 minutes. Then after this, what you're going to do is you observe under UV light for the appearance of blue fluorescence or a pale to bright yellow color. And what this means is the presence of fluorescence or this yellow color indicates that the organism is gram-negative. And of course, there are some limitations to this test, so as always, make sure you read the full package insert before you're doing any type of testing. And one thing that I want to make the distinction of is just, I want to make note of, is that this does not replace a gram stain. It is a supplemental tool, so keep that in mind. So let's go ahead and talk about media. They grow well on your typical media such as blood, chocolate, and CNA. And I said that I was going to talk about morphologies, so here it goes. As far as morphology, colonies can be pinpoint and alpha hemolytic, and also gray and rough. And I mentioned earlier when we were talking about the Gram stain, and I mentioned that you see the classic long thin rods morphology on the urine bench, and maybe the other morphologies like the shorter rods on other areas, right? Maybe like wound cultures or something like that. Well, with this, one thing that I have noticed is that when you have the long thin rods, the colonies are pinpoint and alpha hemolytic. And then when you have the shorter rods, the colonies are gray. And this is something, of course, that I have noticed is because I have done many of these. But it's something to keep in mind. Because, you know, when you're doing urine cultures, you see something pinpoint and alpha, and then you have to rule out Aerococcus urinae if you have an elderly patient. And you also might have to rule, you know, like Streptococcus aginosus and things like that. So you do like a quick Gram stain or a quick wet mount, and you see those long thin rods. Or maybe you just put it in the Molotov and it gives you the ID. But this is something that I have noticed, so keep that in mind. And as I mentioned, they are error tolerant and grow within a day or two. As far as biochemicals, they are catalase negative, and some strains are PYR positive, so that can help you out. They ferment glucose, maltose, and sucrose. As far as mannitol fermentation, that is variable. But one thing I'll note is that phenotypic tests might be unreliable, and this can result on some species being misidentified. So keep that in mind. So speaking of identification, let's go ahead and talk about it. Of course, it is identified by Molditoff MS. That's where we're definitely seeing all these names, right? And of course, you know, I have done episodes about Molditoff, and I have mentioned the pet peeves and the do's and don'ts. But you definitely know that some techs, you know, they moldy everything, and then you see those tiny colonies. Let's put it on the moldy and see what happens. So we end up finding out about all these names. But with Lactobacillus, if you suspect it, you can definitely do like a quick wet mount. And then you see those classic long, thin, gram-positive runs. So as far as identifying it, if you don't have a Molditoff MS, you can definitely use the Vitek, and the ANC card will definitely identify it. But of course, remember that with the ANC card, you need a higher amount of organism because you need to make a very heavy McFarlane, which is over 2.7. And for that, you need more organism. So if you're going that way, you might have to definitely subculture it, maybe one or two plates, so you have enough to make that suspension. As far as reporting it, you know, keep in mind the source. You can isolate Lactobacillus from both sterile and non-sterile source, so always correlated with the source, right? Is this organism pathogenic in this area? Is the flora in this area? Remember, as we mentioned, you know, it's normal flora in the female vaginal area, in the gastrointestinal tract, in the oral tract. So definitely when you are working these cultures, make sure you correlate your organism to the source. Because depending on the source, you might not have to do a full identification or report as Lactobacillus species, and you might end up reporting it as, let's say, your genital flora or normal flora or something like that. And this is very important because those of you that work in urine cultures, you typically up until now, maybe if you haven't been keeping up with the recent guidelines, perhaps you're working on urines and urine cultures, and then you see something alpha, something small, you do a wet mount, you do a Gram stain, you see long thin rods, maybe you do a catalase, is negative, and then you go ahead and report it as your genital flora and you don't do anything else. But there are some changes to the reporting guidelines, and definitely check out the Clinical Microbiology Procedures Handbook. But there are some guidelines about reporting Lactobacillus, which means that under certain criteria, instead of reporting it as your genital flora, you need to report it at least as Lactobacillus species. And according to the handbook, it says to report it as Lactobacillus species when there is significant and pure growth. And when we are thinking about urine cultures, we know that we report things in colony-forming units per ml, so the handbook has the criteria for how many colonies do you need for it to be considered significant or pure growth. So I definitely invite you to check out the handbook. I'm sure that in your lab, in some office, you know, you have it there. If not, definitely ask your supervisor, ask your director, but there are some ways that you can get it. But the information is there, so get familiar with it. And this does not apply only to lactobacillus, but as I mentioned, you know, Actinodictum shallii and other organisms that when you have pure and significant growth, you need to report them at least to the species level. And of course, the other question is, do we perform susceptibilities? Do we not? And typically we do not, unless you have like a sterile source, you have an immunocompromised patient, or you get a request. And for this, you know, I invite you to check out the CLSI M45, where you have the recommended testing drugs. And, you know, it tells you all the instructions, you know, what media, like which Mueller-Hinton, what's the temperature. But keep in mind that this is not going to be like a susceptibility card. You know, for this, you need like grading strips and for MIC testing. But the CLSI M45, you know, has all the information for that. And I mentioned this document before, and I mentioned the CLSI M100 for all the organisms. So this is a great resource for you to have, and it's online, and it's free, so definitely check it out. And some things that you can find in the CLSI M45 for lactobacillus is that some species, you might have to incubate the susceptibility plate under anaerobic conditions. And keep also in mind that with lactobacillus, some species are resistant to vancomycin and may be resistant to cephalosporins. So let's do a quick recap. Lactobacillus is a catalase negative, non-spore-forming gram-positive rod. It is classified within the anaerobes, but it is aerotolerant, so you will see it growing aerobically. It is normal flora of the mouth, of the GI tract, and the female genital tract. And you have seen it when, as a pathogen. Typically, it can affect immunocompromised patients. We see it in bacteremia and endocarditis. And there are some documented cases of other diseases where it has been seen. You can identify it via MALDI-TOF, via VITEC. So keep that in mind as well. Some species are PYR positive. And keep in mind that when you have it in urine cultures, depending on the growth, if it's pure and significant, you have to report it. And there are some morphologies. You have colonies can be gray, and they can be alpha pinpoint, and the gram stain can be long thin rods or short rods. And if you get a susceptibility request or you find yourself that you have to do one, definitely, if you don't have a plan in place in your hospital, I mean, always ask your supervisor, your director, but you can find information about this on the CLSI M45, which is free. And that, my dear audience, is the end of this episode. I hope you enjoy learning about lactobacillus. As always, I enjoy sharing this information with you. And please stay tuned, great episodes coming your way. As I mentioned before, the AMR series is coming back. We're going to start recording some episodes soon. But I definitely invite you to check out the other ones if you haven't. Great content. We have done aminoglycosides, beta-lactams, polymyxins, tetracyclines, so definitely check out the catalog. Great episodes with great guests. So, as always, continue bringing that passion to what you do. It's so important. You do such great work. And also, thank you again. I'm so grateful for your support. Please continue downloading episodes and sharing Let's Talk Micro with others. So, as always, stay motivated, stay safe, and of course, continue talking micro. Until the next time. Bye.